What's going on, apes? Welcome back to the Daily Peels video stream for the day here. I just got done writing the peel for you guys tomorrow, and we need to talk about it. So, it is currently 9:16 p.m. Eastern Time here. This is going to get you nice and ready for the ticker tape tomorrow. Make sure to stay tuned till the end as well to talk about why your job prospects. So, landing that dream role at an investment bank just improved dramatically in Q1. Banking is officially back, and we'll get into the exact numbers in just a couple of minutes. Before that, we'll be talking about the latest commentary from Jerome Powell, and of course, throwing around some nonsense about some big stock movers, what our thoughts are on those stocks, and if the moves that they made today will continue into the future. Stay tuned for all that and some more yapping along the way. All right, WSO Alpha Portfolio. Keep in mind, Eeps, this is our proprietary portfolio that you can go ahead and sign up to trade alongside us, lose money right alongside myself, or celebrate these huge wins that we've seen in names like Airbnb, things like Builders FirstSource, some really obscure names in the portfolio as well that have been big winners. And we actually did just place a brand new trade here today. So make sure you're subscribed to WSO Alpha so you don't miss any of that or our long-form equity research reports. Now, the reason that you should be following this is because, believe it or not, Apes, we are still outperforming the S&P 500 for the year. I don't know why I said believe it or not. It really is too easy to outperform the S&P 500. The NASDAQ, a little bit more of a challenge, you know. I mean, what are we going to do? You know, they're really running it up on us so far this year. We're gaining on them. We're right behind. But that barbell strategy that we employ certainly can detract from us, especially during long periods of bullishness or long periods of very high daily returns for indexes like the NASDAQ. But nonetheless, we did return about 49 basis points lower for the day. Almost said higher, but we lost 49 basis points today. Now, compared to the indexes on the day here, I believe we did just like I said there, we should have outperformed the S&P, underperformed the NASDAQ. It was actually both we outperformed here today. So no big deal. WSO Alpha absolutely running laps around the index providers here today. The NASDAQ lost 1.16%, whereas the S&P was down about 58 basis points. So slight outperformance of the S&P dominating the NASDAQ. Who's surprised? I'm absolutely not. And so that's about it for Alpha going on right now. Keep in mind, everybody, we do have exposure to both Bitcoin and Ethereum in there as well. So crypto degenerates, don't feel left out because we'll be trading alongside you too as well. Now, let's get into some of these banana bits. So first and foremost, there is a new risk for interest rates here in the United States, that being the markets are starting to price for the first interest rate cuts to begin in March of 2025. Now, that would have been heresy to tell somebody last year. I think most portfolio managers would have had an aneurysm on the spot if you told them that we weren't going to have any cuts to interest rates until March of 2025, but the vibe has clearly shifted. I mean, Powell came out yesterday. I'm not going to step out on too much content because we're going to be talking about it for the macro monkey, and he said that the Fed is even starting to change their view on interest rates and exactly how they want to fuck over the economy going forward. So it'll be very interesting to see how that dynamic plays out. Now, moving down below, turns out communism might be back in 2024 as well, because China's GDP growth absolutely smashed expectations in Q1, growing at 5.3% for the quarter. But at the same time, capitalism is still here because expectations for US GDP growth in 2024 are now off the charts. They're some of the highest that they've been in quite a while. So a lot of positivity around the global macroeconomic scenario. Very much a different vibe than what we've seen really over the past 4 years. It's been a hell of a lot of doom and gloom, quite honestly, over the past 8 years or so, since, you know, what's his name, the orange guy, got elected into office. Everybody's been freaking out about the economy since then, or finding something to be upset about. Breaking news, guys, it has been phenomenal the entire time. Inflation is a sign that the economy is literally doing too good. So that's kind of what we've been seeing so far, looking very good for the world's two largest economies in the US and China. Moving on down below, the battle over Ukraine funding took quite an unexpected turn this week, with Speaker of the House Mike Johnson actually teaming up against the Republicans and against the rest of the GOP, pushing for extra funding going to Ukraine and probably going to Israel. And whenever World War III starts, I'm sure you and I, we might be on the front lines together. Who knows? But I will definitely see you there. Just promise you'll have a cigarette for me. All right, let's get into the macro monkey news of the day here. Jay Powell speaks. Like I said, guys, the Federal Reserve is starting to change up their own perspective on interest rates going forward. Really, that's the only perspective that actually matters. And Powell dazzled us once again with that silver fox vibe that he always brings at a policy forum, basically discussing U.S. and Canada economic relations over this past week. Jay Powell said, and I quote, "More recent data shows solid growth and continued strength in the labor market, but also a lack of further progress so far this year on returning to our 2% inflation goal." Brutal, absolutely brutal for markets right there, because it shows, you know, we're killing it, everything's going well, but inflation just won't fuck off. I mean, this thing is far from chill enough to actually be able to get a bid into the fraternity and start to, you know, calm the fuck down and hang out with everybody. What we're seeing, if you look at the chart in the peel here, is that Essentially, it's an asymptotic process, bringing rates back to that 2% level. It was very easy getting them from getting inflation from 7% to 4%, but going from 4% to 2%, whole different battle right there. I mean, it's like in anything, doing the first, 9% is a hell of a lot easier than the first 90%. Then that's a hell of a lot easier than the next 9%, getting into 99%, then getting into all the 0.9s afterwards. The shit Elon and other people who are actually smart talking about all the time. And, of course, I'm going to parrot that kind of vibe. But that's exactly what we're seeing in the monthly data here, or at least in the PCE data, which is what we're talking about in the piece here today. But no real reason to freak out yet, because Powell did go on to say that, and I quote once again, we might have to further increase rates, And then he said, that said, we think policy is well positioned to handle the risks that we face. So basically saying, we still think the policy right now is at its maximum. We don't think that we're going to have to raise rates going forward. But the Fed is starting to set the expectation that maybe, just maybe, interest rates might have to go a little bit higher before they go lower. That is overall a good sign. I mean, not really on the inflationary side itself, but in terms of overall macroeconomic prosperity, we want to be raising interest rates, because interest rates, this is something that moves with economic performance. I forget what the technical term, I think it's pro-cyclical. My economics teacher in college would be so proud of me for remembering that. But interest rates are pro-cyclical with the economy. We're only going to raise them when things are going too well, because the explicit purpose of raising them is to slow things down. We're not going to be raising into a recession, although I'm sure Jay Powell will find a way to do something stupid like that. But either way, essentially, Powell is telling us rates aren't budging anytime soon, opening up the idea for further rate increases. But what does this mean kind of more broadly? Well, if we go ahead and look at kind of the two biggest drivers of inflation in the U.S. and really any economy, it's kind of two things pulling in different directions. That's going to be wage growth and the overall money supply. Wage growth is largely, well, it's partially driven by money supply, but it's more so driven by dynamics contained within the labor market. So if labor demand is exploding off the charts as it had been from, the post-pandemic reaction when Jay Powell sent that bazooka of cash onto the economy until about last summer, the labor market has been absolutely popping off. Wage growth has been incredibly strong. We're still outperforming inflation, so seeing nominal wage increases, but it has been slowing down quite a bit since about mid-2022. Believe it or not, we do want to see that, because increases in wages creates a spiraling dynamic of what we call wage push inflation. We can see this best in things like fast food workers. Like, as the minimum wages of fast food workers increases from $12 an hour to $14 to $15 to $20 an hour now in California, it's no surprise that burger prices increase alongside that. When we scale that to the whole economy, when wage growth increases at a faster rate than it otherwise would, prices are going to increase at a faster rate than they otherwise would as well, because these companies have higher costs. They're trying to protect their margins and ideally grow their margins to keep creating shareholder value, which is, of course, the true American dream. Now, on the money supply side of things, the M2 money supply is what we're looking at here. So that's pretty much every dollar in circulation, except random bullshittery that they do in the M3 money supply. This is the overall amount of dollars that are in circulation. Everybody knows the stat that this grew 40% over about a year and a half period from the beginning of the pandemic until about April of 2022. That is kind of more of a lagging dynamic. That's not necessarily going to start to drive inflation immediately right out of the gate. But what it certainly will do is keep those price increases that inflation caused very sticky. Growing money supply is where you get the reduction in purchasing power, or that's kind of how it's felt among individuals participating in that economy, where that money supply is growing, that's the reduction in purchasing power. Whereas wage growth is kind of where we get that feeling of price increases. At the end of the day, over the long term, these are the same things, but the scale and the timeline for both of them and their impacts on prices overall is going to vary quite a bit. When we get hit with the double whammy of booming M2 money supply along with high wage growth, that's going to create high inflation and make it very sticky. And so this is what's making the battle back down to 2% so asymptotic and so difficult in that regard. Now, effectively going forward, it's not like we would want to necessarily slam the M2 money supply to just make these prices go back down to what they were before. That's not going to happen. One, companies don't want to cut their prices. There's literally no incentive to do so unless demand completely dries up, and American consumers are still spending money at the ass like it's in the damn 1920s. Well, I guess it is kind of the booming 20s now, but we'll have to ask Jay Gatsby if it's very similar personally. He can give us the best perspective on that. If we were to start to destroy the M2 money supply, that's how you get things like deflation. Or, you get an increase in purchasing power, That might sound good on its face, but deflation is basically the worst thing that can happen to an economy. Everybody stops buying in the US. That's like getting cancer in the economy because 70% of our GDP is from consumer spending. Everybody expects prices to be lower a month from now, a week from now, tomorrow even. Nobody's going to spend money today. So we definitely don't want that to dry up. But essentially, at the end of the day, I think what's going to be most important going forward is if somebody finds Jerome Powell, duct tapes him to a chair, shuts his mouth, and keeps him in a basement for the next couple of months while the economy just figures this shit out. We don't need this guy coming out here and dazzling us. I mean, he's just so silver foxy. It's hard to resist everything that he says right there. We're hanging on every word. It's no surprise why hedge funds were built around the utterances, the phrases, and even the tonations of the voices of Federal Reserve chairmen in the past. Can you imagine I wouldn't be surprised if hedge funds have J-Pow's bedroom bugged. He's probably, you know, pillow talking to his wife like, yeah, baby, I'm going to cut rates by whatever the fuck amount on certain date. I wouldn't be surprised if hedge funds had that shit bugged. That seems like something that, you know, Millennium, Citadel, other players in the industry would certainly be up for. So if you work at any of those companies, let me know if you're on the bugging J-Pow team, because that's pretty insane and I would like to apply to join your company. Anyway, let's go ahead down below into some of the stock movers of the day. First and foremost, we have United Airlines. Quite a bit of a surprise because this company rose at 17.5% on the day. Holy fucking shit, that's absolutely unbelievable. I think 17.5 is more than the total amount of planes that have flown in the United States this year that haven't experienced some sort of mechanical error from Boeing. So shout out to United for killing it. Basically, they posted a much narrower loss than expected at about 15 cents per share loss when it was really 53 cents per share that the street was looking for. Way better than expected, almost four times less money lost, but obviously still losing money. You know, generally not the best thing unless you're a trader like me, and that's pretty much all you can do. Obviously, that's not ideal for a company or for that all-important shareholder value, which is really what we're all here to create. But it was really guidance that lifted shares into takeoff here. Great plane joke right there, by the way. Analysts had been expecting about $3.76 per share in terms in guidance for the second quarter of this year. United came out and said, fuck that. It's actually going to be in the range of $3.75 to $4.25. That puts the median at $4 per share. Boom, way above expectations. Share price is off to the races. That's basically what we saw with United. We'll see if they can actually deliver on that because they are very much shifting their plane mix away from Boeing and into Airbus because they actually want their passengers to make it to their destinations alive. So, you know, very bold strategy, but we'll see if they can pull it off. I would say that they probably can, but the question is that going to translate into share price returns? Who knows, especially with all the conflicts going on, if oil prices rise, that fucks over airline companies. So, you know, dangerous territory right there, just like stepping on a Boeing plane. All right, let's move into one of the other stock movers of the day, one actually moving in the right direction here. We have Interactive Brokers. They were only up about 1.7%. This is basically, this company is kind of what Robinhood tries to be, but for actual smart people. This is a discount trading platform for actual traders, not 19-year-olds with $700 in an account want to gamble on, you know, zero-day options on AMC, which seems to be the primary revenue-driving force at Robinhood. Interactive Brokers is actually a real company. So they did post relatively mid-earnings, but obviously there's an easy way around that to get your share price to still go up. Just fucking raise your dividend, and that's exactly what Interactive Brokers did. Not only is that great because shareholders are going to get paid more for holding the stock, but it's also a show, it's a sign of confidence so that executives and management think that, you know, the company is going to be able to still achieve their growth targets even with sending more money out to shareholders rather than reinvesting that in the business. Shout out to Interactive Brokers, up 1.7%. JB Hunt Transportation Service, you know, very much like certain activities that go on typically in a bedroom, nobody likes to see when things come in softer than expected. And that's exactly what happened in the trucking market specific to JB Hunt in the first quarter of this year. They said that demand was way softer than they had anticipated. That led to things like a 22% dive in their freight brokerage business, 9% fall in revenue overall. And pretty much, it's one of those classic, just disgusting reports. Everything came in below expectations. Revenue, earnings were declining. Very tough look for the U.S. transportation industry. We'll get word over the next couple of days here as more transportation stocks start to release their numbers. But right now, this could be just a JB Hunt problem, could be an industry-wide problem. Management did say that there's an oversupply of trucks in the U.S. and that's pulling down freight prices. Obviously, that's going to hurt revenue going forward. But we'll see if JB Hunt just sucks in managing those prices or if, you know, other companies are kind of getting fucked over on that front too. All right, finally, let's move into our last stock of the day. We have ASML Holdings. This baby was down 7.1% today. This is a Dutch semiconductor stock, which seems like an oxymoron to me, quite honestly. I'm pretty sure all they do in the Netherlands and in Amsterdam in particular is smoke weed and pick tulips. But either way, apparently they have semiconductor companies popping off over there. Amsterdam, actually great city as well. I was there last summer. That is where stock markets were invented. The Euronext Exchange was actually now it's called the Euronext Exchange. It used to be the Amsterdam Stock Exchange. Super cool place to go. You can absolutely nerd out on vacations and make your girlfriend's family or your friends hate you even more than they already do. Anyway, let's get into the stock price action. It was down 7.1% on the day because they had absolute garbage earnings. EPS and sales both beat estimates, actually, but it was really the guidance and kind of the vibe going forward that surprised investors to the downside. So ASML, they're very similar to Applied Materials. They make equipment that is then used to make semiconductors. This is a classic picks and shovels play, but just on the semiconductor industry. Basically, they said that demand could potentially be drying up for a lot of their, lithography machines. I can really pronounce that word, let alone describe what the hell it is, but people way smarter than me tell me that these kinds of machines are needed to make those AI chips that have caused NVIDIA and other chip stock earnings to absolutely pop off. Bookings fell 4% for those machines, so could be a sign that demand is finally drying up for AI-driven chips. Quite honestly, I think that the big problem with this report is what it might mean for NVIDIA, and that's why this report took down really the entirety of the chips industry, and it wasn't limited to just ASML, because if they are seeing lower bookings for this equipment that makes these all-important chips that have led to the explosion in AI and really the revival of markets over the past year and a half or so, that could mean that NVIDIA's earnings are going to come in a little bit shorter than expectations. If that happens, look out below. I mean, AI and the revolution that, you know, ChatGPT and NVIDIA kind of brought on in late 2022, that really has been what's been pushing markets into the bull market that we've been experiencing. Not necessarily saying that it's going to go away just because one company misses an earnings report, but when it's NVIDIA in 2024, very high risk that it potentially could. Look out below if that is the case. We're very excited for NVIDIA's earnings. They usually do come very late in the season, however, so expect that in late May. All right, final story of the day, Thought Banana here. Shout out to these bananas. Banking is back, apes. We've been saying it for so long, but the Wall Street Journal finally said it too, and that means that it must be true. So, you know, clearly they're not copying our content or anything. We're definitely copying. I mean, you know, it's not a copyright violation or anything, right? I'd link to the source here. We're really just using their numbers anyway, but we are talking about the six largest banks and how much money they made from investment banking revenues in the first quarter of 2024. In case you're wondering, it was way more than was expected. We saw massive growth from all these companies in those departments. The lowest amount of growth in investment banking revenue specifically was Morgan Stanley, growing 16% annually. The highest was Wells with a very, very, very nice 69% growth over the year. Now, Bank of America was at 38%, Goldman Sachs 32%, Citi was tied at 32%, and JP Morgan, very solid growth in investment banking fees as well at 27%. The vast majority of this was driven by underwriting as opposed to advisory fees, specifically in equities. Morgan Stanley saw almost 2x growth in its equity underwriting fees it collected, and they set a fresh new record, according to Citi CEO Jane Fraser, in the total amount that all six of these banks, basically it was the most amount of debt sales or debt underwriting that they did in a single quarter. It was very close to the all-time record, so, you know, that's essentially what she said. I didn't actually look at the numbers, so I can't really confirm that, but that is what Citi CEO Jane Fraser essentially said. The rest of the earnings report were pretty shitty, and that's why we saw most of them decline on the day. Really, it was only, let me go ahead and take another look here. It was Morgan Stanley was the only one that had an actual positive return on the day that it dropped its earnings. Everybody else was complete garbage. Morgan Stanley rose 2.47%. Isn't that funny that they were the lowest investment banking revenue growth, but they were the only stock that actually rose in response to their earnings. We saw JPMorgan Chase fall nearly 6.5%. Other names like Bank of America fell over 3.5%. Goldman just about 3%. Oh no, Goldman rose. I just typed this wrong. So it was both Goldman and Morgan Stanley that actually saw that investment banking revenue fee growth. These companies, it's kind of like a love-hate relationship. I'm pretty sure they would make out with each other if they could, but everybody at these banks seems to consider each other bitter rivals. Let me know if I'm wrong on that, and that's kind of a blast from the past and isn't actually true anymore, but, you know, from what I can see, it definitely seems to me the vibe still for now. Now, the rest of the reports were pretty garbage outside of investment banking revenue growth, especially when we look at FDIC charges and Bank of America's $109 billion bag of dog shit that they're holding in terms of unrealized losses on their bond portfolio. very tough scene in that regard. Hopefully that doesn't create a whole nother SVB situation, because the SVB was to happen at Bank of America. Like I said with ASML Holdings, look out below, guys. That would definitely not be a good sign. That might be the Armageddon that we're all waiting for. And maybe that would push us into World War III and we can finally be on the front lines right next to each other. All right, enough yapping for the day here. We are going to finish with a quote from none other than the kingpin himself, the Wall Street crowner, the kingmaker on Wall Street, Mr. Jamie Dimon. This is one of my favorite Dimon quotes of all time. Doesn't really have anything to do with anything else we've talked about here today, but he is the CEO of the largest bank in the world, and I just yapped about banks for a couple of minutes. He said, "I'm a little bit of an eternal optimist. People always say to me, if you go do this and it fails, what are you going to do? I don't care. I'm going to give it my best shot, and that's what I'm going to do. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and I will try again." Isn't that beautiful? One of the most successful people in the world talking about what would happen if he wasn't successful. I'm sure he knows exactly what that feels like and is speaking from personal experience, so definitely take those lessons from him. That about finishes it up for us here today, guys. Hope everybody's having a great week so far. I know we didn't deliver a video for you yesterday. It was quite the hectic evening over here at the Daily Peel Global headquarters, so we don't necessarily have to get into exactly what was going on, but, you know, a lot of stuff going on over here. Very sorry about that. We're going to continue our regularly scheduled programming going forward. So with that said, I will see you guys tomorrow. Happy investing, happy trading, apes. Hope everybody has a wonderful rest of their evening. Bye now.